This is the Blaze Radio On Demand.
In the next 19 seconds, you could sell your home. Okay, it's not going to sell your home, you're going to take a big step toward getting it sold. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com and find an agent selected by my team, a professional who shares your values and speaks the truth. Sell your home fast and for the most money. Get moving at realestateagentsitrust.com.
Now, spreading freedom across the nation, this is 3, 2, 1.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Team Buck, welcome to the Freedom Hut. Very good to have you here, as always. 888-900-3393. I would love to take a lot of calls today because, it's always fun to take your calls. But today in particular, maybe some of you can explain the world to me and what is going on. Well, explain America to me. The world still makes sense to me. The world I can understand. America right now feels a little, what? What's going on? Somebody explain to me how this is all supposed to work out. I mean, let's just start for a second. You've got Hillary Clinton, who is so in every way, I feel like, such a flawed and disreputable person. And that's the Democrats, and they're all in lockstep, right? And they love to throw in the term fascist all the time for Trump. Meanwhile, when you look at the way that they support Hillary Clinton, there's no dissent, right? At least not publicly. There's a very unified front. Everyone's like, oh, she is the greatest ever. And, you know, they tell us that she's really warm in person, and oh, she's just inspiring, and she's going to get the job done, and she's going to be the CEO president, all this kind of stuff. You know, she's inspiring? Really? What is inspiring about this grasping, social climbing, corrupt, self-dealing, self-interested, vile person who, by the way, I feel like at any point in time, some aides might have to run on stage to change out a giant battery in her somewhere. You know, just like, meh, 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 I'm Hillary. It's all so fake and so staged. And it's like we're supposed to be excited about what? A redux of the 90s with the Clintons running around. You know, Bill Clinton is somebody who was in some ways incredibly lucky to be president at a time when American dominance was essentially beyond dispute, not just in a military sense, but in an economic one. And we just come off of defeating the Soviet Union relatively, recently. And the internet boom, I mean, the enormous change in the global economy that was occurring as well. It was the beginning of it, but you had this sort of tech boom. And then, of course, there was a bust, but the boom was followed by a real boom, which is the changed world that we all live in now, where I can sit here as I talk to you on radio in the Freedom Hut. I can, with a few touches of my thumb, order, from 100 different restaurants, and I can have any book that can reasonably be found on the internet delivered to me within 24 hours. And I can send out my thoughts, and if people like them and they share them, millions of people can read. I mean, instantaneous publishing. I mean, we've sort of gotten used to this dramatically changed and altered world. I think it's interesting that Hillary Clinton is one of the two main party candidates for president. I still get aggravated emails from the Gary Johnson crowd that he is the third party candidate. It's like, all right, guys. Gary Johnson, it's true, he is a third-party candidate. It is also true that I could write in Buck Sexton and see how that goes for me, but, you know, whatever. That would be a little narcissistic and weird, and I don't plan on doing that, but I'm just saying. A lot of things are true. It doesn't mean they're necessarily relevant. But, all right. So, and I just find that, because I love you libertarians. I just like to sort of poke at you sometimes, because I get all your messages. I know, you're like, Buck, why are you being a punk about libertarians? And I'm just like, why didn't you guys invite me to the Fish concert? You know, why am I not asked to come hang out with, does the Grateful Dead still tour? They do, right? I don't know. See, I know libertarians are actually a very serious intellectual bunch, but The weed jokes are fun to throw out there. It's Friday, guys. Let's have a little fun. If I've said this for a long time, by the way, about this election in particular. If we can't have a sense of humor about it, it's just going to be miserable for all of us. If you can't laugh about some of this stuff, and I know this is when I get a very stern email. Oh, Buck, the Republic is at stake. I'm like, yeah, I know all of the stakes, all of the risks, everything. I get all of it. But we're having a conversation, not just you and me now. I mean, in general, you know, the country. I mean, Democrats don't have a sense of humor about elections. They can only mock the other side. I think one thing that separates us from them, one thing that should separate right from left, is that we're able to laugh at ourselves. We're able to laugh at the whole situation. The entire thing does feel a little absurd right now. In a country of 320 million people, where we have millions who have served or are actively serving the United States military, we have people who are so impressive and so brilliant and honorable and patriotic. And lots of them, right? I mean, we are full up. We got people all over the place who are incredibly noble and decent and hardworking and talented and amazing. And we've got Hillary Clinton on the one side, and we got Donald Trump on the other. I also think, by the way, we need to stop this. It's a fun game to play, right? Where it's like, well, there's some other. It's because of the bad people who did this thing and gave us this reality. It's kind of a reflection of a broad swath of American public sentiment. That much is true. People, millions and millions of people voted for these two candidates. This is what we've got. This is where we are. And you would think, or at least this is one of many thoughts I have these days that I really just can't get around. I'm unable to. You'd think that given because I was speaking before about the 90s and the internet and how everything has changed and everything's kind of different now, and everyone is individually empowered both to be more knowledgeable and to share their knowledge in ways that would have been unthinkable 30 years ago, 20 years ago. No one really had any idea. I mean, I still remember, I don't know how many of you had the experience, the first time you really kind of got on the internet in any meaningful way. You know, I remember it was sort of, you know, AOL and welcome and, you know, all that stuff. I had an AOL email address. I have no idea what it is now. And I also remember being over at a friend's house and he's like, hey, man, check this out. And it was CompuServe, which I don't even know what happened to them. That was the internet provider. And you could go into a chat room and the chat rooms are broken up. It was like politics, sports, religion. And you get in there and you'd say, you know, hey, like, who else here is a Republican? Everybody, right? Shut up. We hate you. So that hasn't changed, right? That's all to say. who else likes the founding fathers? Oh, you're a racist. You're a jerk. It's like, whoa, okay. Woo. Now you just get that on Twitter and it's much faster, but you could go into a chat room back in the day. And just the whole notion of a chat room was also fascinating and different. I bring all this up because, well, one, it's funny to me that we're now, so much has changed, and yet, to borrow from Yogi Berra, it feels like deja vu all over again with we have another Clinton running for. We have not just it's not even like a new generation of Clinton. We got the wife running now. Oh, OK. Now, this is the best we can do. And despite all of our increases in information and distribution of knowledge that exists right now, and many have pointed out, never before have we been in a position where people could become so educated on their own as we are now. And despite all of that, the oldest tricks in the book, the sort of basic human psychology factors that have been deciding issues in politics for as long as there's been any really organized political structure anywhere that wasn't just a guy who says, do this or else I've got people with spears or knives or whatever, and they're going to come after you. And I guess you could also argue that all politics is really just a variation on that. It's just a question of how just or unjust it might be. But it's at some level, it is just a monopoly on force or an attempt to monopolize force, whether for the public good or just for the good of individuals. Anyway, for as long as there's been political organization, right, to go back to ancient Greece, go back to the basis of the term demagogue, the history of demagoguery. In ancient Greece, and you see that this has always been a real threat, that one person who is capable of capturing the public imagination And by the way, I say this for Trump and for Hillary in different ways. One person who's able to capture the public imagination is able to force is able to bring them to very, very bad decisions and to take them in the wrong direction. Are we there with either of these candidates yet? We'll see. I don't really know what either of them is going to do, which I also find to be a fascinating reality. Right? I couldn't really tell you that much about what Donald Trump is going to do. And even with Hillary Clinton, I know that it'll be left. So I know that, but I don't know how far left. I saw a very interesting sort of a diversion. I'm just going to let it rip today, guys. So we're going to be hanging out talking, you know, whatever. It's how we do it. And also want to hear from all of you, especially if you called in yesterday and didn't get through. I knew there were some calls that tried to get in and we kind of got lost in the shuffle. Our lines are open. It's Freestyle Fridays. This is kind of a freestyle. Even with all the stuff that's going on right now with Hillary, I don't know how far left she'll go. And I saw a tweet, I think it was from Kevin Williamson a couple of days ago, where he said Hillary was a hardline ideologue of the left, but now she's been so consumed with wealth and achieving wealth and power for so long that I think he said, like, she's not even clear why she was hard left in the first place. It's been so long. I think there's a lot of truth to that. I also think that it might be something that she sort of dusts off and all of a sudden you really get a sense that she is an Alinskyite. Just now that she has all the wealth and all the power that any human being could ever dream of, assuming she becomes president, you might see a sort of return to that Alinskyite ideology instead of just a what can you do for me now? What can you get for me? What will this get for me? Which I think is a prime motivator for her. But my other thoughts about this, and this is sort of a mishmash of watching the Peter Thiel speech, which I thought was very interesting to have this wildly successful Silicon Valley entrepreneur, also a guy who's openly gay and very, very much backing Donald Trump. Have him speaking about this. And so you get these sort of inflection points. You have these elements of a 21st century political movement. It's different now, right? It's what are we focusing on? How we distribute information? It's all different. You would think, you know, and he's obviously somebody who is very well known in this tech, web, internet communities. I feel like no one says the web anymore, right? We just say the internet. Do people say the web? Web feels like an old term to me. It's certainly WWW. No one writes that out anymore, right? You would think that we'd be at this place where there's so much more data. It's so much more relevant. Everyone has access to it. We have all this information. And yet, we are choosing between, if we choose to make a choice, which I understand many of you have told me. I read through a lot of Facebook messages, a lot after yesterday. Noted. Those of you who were not thrilled with my sense of how day three or day four, whatever it was, of the RNC went, fair enough. But you would think that we'd be at a place now where it's all where people are voting or deciding with better information, with more information than ever before. And yet we have on the one side someone who's just going on name recognition and an outdated but still very powerful political machine, Hillary Clinton. And on the other, somebody who inspires emotion and passion in crowds just based on his ability to sort of entertain and conjure up a narrative really on the spot that shifts constantly. But like the old demagogues in ancient Greece, can get the crowd on his side. And if the crowd goes with you, well, that's power. That's power. We can sit around and talk about fact-checking and Google searching and the access to information that everybody has now, the ability to propagate information that both sides, all sides of a political discussion have. And yet really what it comes down to is what can the person make others feel? Still all based on emotion, still all just conceptual in that sense, right? It's, well, how do we get people to feel a certain way? And how will they feel about voting for a specific candidate? You know, see, it's interesting to me. On the one hand, you've got Peter Thiel up there, who's a guy who you think it's the data. It's the 21st century. It's the changing world, the information economy, being competitive as an economy. How do we do this? Very much somebody who's from the future, sort of futuristic, future leaning and data-driven universe that we're going into, that we're already in, and it's just increasing all the time. And yet you've got a Republican nominee whose greatest gift, for better or for worse, like him or not, is the ability to inspire emotions and feelings in a crowd. And on the other side, you have somebody who doesn't have that, but what she does have is name recognition and an aging political machine that still has a sort of a last gasp here in terms of its ability to perhaps propel an otherwise odious and completely uninspiring candidate across the finish line. This is where we are. So I can sit here and I can order all the books I could ever want to read. I could bring up information. I can read books on my computer. I can have sushi delivered to me in 15 minutes. I could buy a waterbed with a few clicks of a button. Do they still sell waterbeds? I don't know. I think they do. Not that I want a waterbed. I could do any number of things, right? I could just think of all the apps. I could have a car service come and pick me up. I could. And yet, we're choosing between somebody whose name we know and somebody who gets a crowd fired up. That's what it is. It's kind of amazing when you think about it that way. That's really all it is. Everything else is kind of an addition to that. And we'll get into the addition. We'll get into some of the specifics of the speech last night. 888-900-3393. Team sponsors, half hour is Silencer Shop. Look, if you've never been out to the range, if you've never been shooting with a silencer, with a suppressor, you want to add this into the toolkit you've got when you go out there. You want to add silencers into your possession. They make the whole experience a lot more fun. And if you're looking for a silencer, the best place to possibly go is silencershop.com. Now, they've got you covered on all aspects of the process, because there is a little bit of a process to go through, but you can do it. They'll help you get through it. You do it legally, and you're good to go. So they'll take you step by step as you make sure that you cross all the T's and dot all the I's. And then the fun part, of course, is that you can pick from all the best brands currently on the market. They've got stuff by Sig, by Yankee Hill Machine. They've got everything by everybody. They've got a wide selection, fantastic prices, and customer service is essential to them. So please go to silencershop.com. Check out what they've got there. They'll walk you through everything that you need to purchase a silencer from them. And then when you're out there, you'll just have more fun. It just makes the whole shooting experience more enjoyable. So go to silencershop.com, team. Again, that is silencershop.com. Help make the world a quieter place. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Buck Sexton Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
What's up, Team Buck? Have you ever tried a Casper mattress? They are incredible. Casper is an obsessively engineered mattress at an incredibly fair price. It combines springy latex and supportive memory foams to create an award-winning sleep surface with just the right sink and the perfect amount of bounce. Time magazine named it as one of the best inventions of 2015. You get free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada, and you can try it free for 100 nights, risk-free, in your own home. And if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. It's made right here in America. All you have to do is go to Casper.com/buck. That's www.casper.com/buck. You can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/buck. Terms and conditions apply. This is an incredible mattress at a fantastic price. You can get it now via this deal. Check it out.
You're listening to The Buck Sexton Show, only on the Blaze Radio Network.
Oh man, somebody was tweeting if I ever used to play the early video game Oregon Trail. I don't say Oregon because what's up? I know Oregon people. I know how you like. I'm still working on getting to Nevada as my, you know, as like the reflex there. Nevada, not Nevada. Oh, who's going to Nevada? No, Nevada. That's how you say it, Nevada. By the way, is it Louisiana or Louisiana? Someone's going to have to. We got some Louisiana in the house because someone needs to call in and tell me how we say that properly. But I know it's Oregon, not Oregon. Unless you're from like the Northeast, the coastal United States on the East Coast, then you say Oregon. But Oregon Trail was a game that was fun because you'd go out there, and this is sort of before, I guess, it was too mean to do this sort of thing. And part of the game was you had to hunt animals for food because that's what people used to do. But that doesn't really compare to Sid Meier's Civilization for me, which I think I've talked to you about before. Those of you who are millennials within, like, certainly my age, 5 years up or 5 years down, I assume at some point it's possible you may have played Civilization. That was there were a few times in my life where I was sort of more at peace and happy than when I could sort of hang out in my parents' study and play Civilization on the computer for like 8 hours at a time. I'm lucky I didn't have some sort of weird blood clot in my leg or something because, man. But, you know, sometime the Aztecs really got out of line. And then when I was Gandhi and the Aztecs were getting all uppity, or if I was Genghis Khan of the Mongols, sometimes you got to nuke somebody to send a message. Civilization was amazing. All right, I do have to talk a little bit about the RNC. We will get into a little bit of the RNC. Not too much, I promise. And we'll talk about other things, too. And we're just going to have some fun. So light up those lines. 888-900-3393.
The Buck Sexton Show on the Blaze Radio Network. Sexton Show.
888-900-3393, team. I love that we got some calls coming in. I want to take them. Let's get to a couple. Then we'll talk about some other random stuff. We'll talk about some more. We're just going to have fun today. We're going to let it all out, everybody. Whatever you want to talk about. By the way, Freestyle Friday means anything's fair game. Whatever comes to mind, whatever you think the rest of the team wants to or should hear, wants to hear, you'd like them to hear. Lines are open. We have a Dr. Betty Harris calling in from Arkansas. What's up, Dr. Harris?
Well, good morning or afternoon, Buck. It's so great to talk to you.
I'm great to talk to you.
I'm a fan of yours and your program.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely love you.
Thank you. Well, I feel the same way about you, Dr. Harris, so thank you.
Well, I wanted to call and pose a question to you. Donald Trump seems to think it is so important for him to introduce himself as Donald J. Trump. I don't know what the specific nature of the J is, but I suggest to you that it should stand for Judas, because I am quite certain that he would sell his soul for 30 pieces of silver.
Okie doke. Well, I mean, I think that's...
And that's my opinion.
What am I going to say? He's led a life of complete and utter honesty, and I mean, you know, I'm not in a dream world here, Dr. Harris. We'll have to sort of see how he's like. I think so much of this is really contingent, and some people, of course, will disagree with this, but I think so much of this contingent upon whether if he wins, this was all it was breaking the mold, and he's a new kind of politician, and it's a new Republican Party. If he loses, people will look back on all this and say, how could everyone not have known right away and what an unbelievable disaster this was, and how do we reconstitute the party? And let's pretend that this never happened. I think the stakes for Trumpism as well as for the Republican Party couldn't be any higher, but I also think we don't really know what the reality of it all is until we see if winning matters. I think that's a simple way to put it. And that's not really a direct response, Dr. Harris, to your comment about him selling out or being very concerned with money. I will say that I have a little bit of trouble. Anything else, Dr. Harris, by the way? I didn't mean to just go on a tangent there.
No, I can understand that. And, you know, you're quite right. If he wins, the ball is in his court. He can prove to all of us that we are wrong. But I have great fear of that.
You're not alone. You're not alone there. At this point, my favorite part about trying to in any way either repurpose or take a Trump statement and if not defend it, at least explain it a little bit, is that he does drive liberals insane, which is fun. And I like that. So at least we got that going for us, Dr. Harris, which is...
Well, he did drive liberals insane. But after his acceptance speech, I'm not sure there are many liberals that are looking at that speech and saying, oh, we're on the same side after all.
He's not. This is what's so funny to me. People are saying he's a fascist and he's Hitler and all this other stuff. He's going to be a wishy-washy centrist on a whole bunch of things. On a whole bunch of things if he gets elected.
That's why his middle name should be Judas.
All right, Dr. Harris. Good to talk to you. Thank you for calling in. Thank you for your kind words about the show. You know, I had two very nice. It's funny that this would happen. This is never really. It's been a long time since anyone came up to me in an airport. I think I wrote about this on Facebook. A very nice lady came up to me on Tuesday when I was at the airport going down to Dallas, and just came over to say, you know, I just really like your show. I listen every day, and I was just having look. I hate airport travel. I just hate it, and I've just got a lot of other things on my mind right now, and I'm trying to figure out. I've got a lot of things on my mind from the political sense, you know, sort of the personal sense, everything. Right? I mean, you know, we all go through these phases. We're like, what? You know, I gotta get a couple things. I gotta get rowing in the same direction on a few things here, and I was just. The whole airport thing puts me in a I'll be honest. Airports just put me in a foul mood right away. I hate planes. I hate airports. People say, oh, are you afraid to fly? I'm not afraid to fly. I hate flying, right? I feel like this is like if I said, you know, I really don't like eating lots and lots of liver with fava beans. They're like, well, are you afraid of liver? No, I'm not afraid of it. I don't like it. I'm not on a plane, you know, freaking out about it. I'm just like, this is, you know, the person behind me is always tap, tap, tappy, tap, tapperoo on the back of my seat. You know, you don't have to jam your fingers through the screen that's on the back of my chair. You can actually just touch it. It is a touch screen. It's not a punch screen. It's not like, oh, you're a wimp, hit me harder. No, you press your finger up against it and you touch it. And then from there, you can watch all the wonderful, you can watch all the, you know, CW and Bravo and USA Network and, you know, whatever they've got going there. When are we going to get the Blaze on the back of TV seats? I mean, back of plane seats, rather. That's what I want to know. But yeah, the whole plane experience, I find incredibly annoying. And I think it's been a 75%. I must have been on almost 10 flights or maybe a dozen flights in the last 6 weeks, at least. And I think I've got about a 75% delay rate, meaning that there's a 3 out of 4 chance that there'll be some kind of a delay. And I just don't know how it's just this must have been like life in the Soviet Union. Nothing ever works. Nothing's ever on time. Nobody cares. It's uncomfortable. If you can get anything done, it's expensive. You know, that's what it is. And airports are really one of the only places where you pay money not to be happy. You pay money to be punished less. It's a very important difference. You know, you go to a resort, you pay more money and you have a bigger room. You have an ocean view. But I mean, you know, most decent resorts, you pay less money. Okay, you're in a clean room. It's nice. This is within reason, right? In an airport, though, now it's, well, if you're first class, I do not fly first class, but which also I feel like some people have looked. I had a couple of people. I've had a few plane things happen. I had some. We don't call them stewards or stewardesses anymore, Ty. What do we call them? It's flight attendant now. That's the proper term. I believe you're probably correct. You're correct, sir. So we have flight attendants. I guess that's also gender neutral. So this is the brave new world we live in now. And they came over, and they're very excited to see me because two of them actually came over, and they were very excited to see me because they watch a lot of CNN, and apparently I'm feisty and have memorable hair. So just putting that out there. And they came over, and they're sort of talking to me about stuff. And I could tell that they're like, you're back here? I'm like, yes, yes. Seat 22F. That's how I roll because I'm a baller, yo. I'm a player. So, yes. I like having people basically sitting on my lap because we're so close together in terms of our shoulders and our knees and everything. I've had two instances of people who are falling asleep next to me and in a state of sort of semi-sleep / drool coming out, just sort of like flopped on. Of course, they're both dudes and not small dudes at that, sort of flopped onto my shoulder. And as much as I'm a humanitarian and like to be kind to people, I don't know if nuzzling strange dudes is on a plane is my thing,
So I had to sort of be like, what do you do? What noise are you supposed to make when someone sort of falls asleep on your shoulder, total stranger? You have to be like, excuse me, sir. Can I get you a pillow? So I had some of that happening recently. Oh, man, all the travel. All the traveling that occurs. I had somebody come up to me on Tuesday, which really brightened up my day because I hate planes and I've got other things on my mind. And the world makes everything that I think is going to happen in the world. Brexit makes sense to me. The growing threat from jihadism makes sense to me. Europe's immigration disaster makes sense. I mean, you look at all this, that all makes sense. I don't spend a lot of time on the Brazil stuff. I'm a Europe to Mid East to sort of sub-Saharan Africa, stopping right around where things go into the Congo in terms of my knowledge base. I mean, that's sort of what I focus on. And, you know, so Eurasia, South Asia, Mid East, Africa, basically Muslim Africa or parts of Africa that have been Islamized over the centuries. I don't spend a lot of time on Central and South America, just not really in my portfolio of interest and background. So I don't do much of the Brazil stuff. But the areas of the world that I pay attention to, they make sense to me. But right now, America is a little bit of a... that's kind of where I am right now. I'm figuring it out. And I don't know how it's going to go. And I definitely have a hard time with anybody who says they do know where it's going to go, because I'm not buying it. Okay, where else was I on this? Oh, yeah, and then somebody, a pilot came up to me yesterday. It was very nice. He's like, excuse me, young man. Actually, he didn't say young man, because I just want people to start saying that now, because I'm getting up there. He came over to me, and he's like, I knew he was a friendly writer. When someone says, are you on CNN? I never know if they're going to be like, oh, great, and then try to punch me in the face, right? Because, you know, I'm the, what do you call the bad guy wrestler? Is it a jobber? It's a jobber. A heel. Thank you. I'm a heel at CNN, right? It's like I come out there with my mankini and my knee pads and my like lace up boots from, that's what they used to wear, the wrestlers back in the day. I used to watch the WWF, and I come out there and I'm like, you know, and I like do the whole flexing thing. And of course the heel has like never lifted a weight in his life. And needs to maybe get to a tanning booth somewhere compared to these other guys who come out there like the Ultimate Warrior, who used to do a ton of roids and was absolutely enormous. But I go out there and I'm like, yay. And you're just there to get body slammed and annihilated. But I never know if a member of the public is going to see this and then or see me and be like, well, you're on CNN. I hate your face. Because they certainly tweet that at me. But he said this pilot came up to me. First of all, I'm in Dallas. So it's like friendly territory. See, in New York, I feel like if things ever got rowdy, somebody would be like, this guy's a Republican, get him. And like, you know, the mob would form and I'd be like, no, I'm a New Yorker. It's cool. I'm mostly libertarian. Please don't beat me up. Thank you, libertarians, for existing, because when I need to get out of an uncomfortable social situation, I pretend to be one of you. I flash my libertarian card and they're like, oh, well, I mean, socially liberal. Okay, all right, that's fine. We could all be friends now. You know, I mean, I don't like some of your, you know, you're not nice about the economic policies, but so libertarians, you give me cover. I mean, libertarians, you may have saved my life a few times, quite honestly. You've definitely saved a few dates for me.
I'm sorry. Do you fill in for Rush Limbaugh?
Well, I'm
wait a second. Are you, you work for Glenn Beck? Like,
well, I'm mostly libertarian, though. You know, I'm a very libertarian tendencies.
This is right. Ty, this is acceptable. This is what you got to do to right? You pull the libertarian card and it's like, oh, okay, he's cool. You know, it's like it's like I'm about to get really badly beat up and then they like find the right gang tattoo or whatever. And they're like, oh, he's cool. Like, we'll leave him alone. Like, he's connected. Or, you know, I'm like a mafia guy and I say like, oh, my uncle Giuseppe, you know, ooh, is that a microaggression? Why is his name Giuseppe Buck? Good question. I don't know. But I saw a pilot and we're in Dallas. So Dallas is obviously home turf. So in Dallas, if somebody gets all uppity in my face about my politics, I could be like, excuse me, y'all. This gentleman over here, he's threatened to give me a beating because, and you know, and everybody comes to my team, which, you know, plus one for you, Dallas. Well done. But the pilot came over, totally nice guy, and just said, I remember you from, he said, well, you're one of Glenn Beck's guys. I remember you from that show. And I really liked that show. It was real smart. All those young, smart people on that show. And I was like, oh, yes, The Real News. Which I still think is the best political right of center panel show that, I mean, yeah, I was obviously a part of it and it was a huge part of my sort of career and time at The Blaze up to this point. But I still think it's the best panel show that's ever been on TV. I mean, if you care about learning stuff and really knowing sort of in detail the facts and not some other, you know, bloviating nonsense stuff that goes on out there. Okay, I said I would talk about things, and I will, but we can also talk about other things you want. 888-900-3393. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll take some calls. Stay with me.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Discover more at theblaze.com/radio.
The Blaze Radio Network.
This is the Buck Sexton Show.
Let's take Josh in South Carolina. What's up, Josh?
Hey, Buck.
Hey, Josh.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, indeed we can, all of us.
I'm sorry about that.
That's all good.
How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you? You're on radio. What do you want to talk about?
So much. You haven't... I have something quick that I wanted to kind of tell you where I'm coming from. I'm a Cruz supporter, and I wanted to get your reaction to my reaction to a reaction of Cruz's speech. And I know that's kind of complicated, but just to let you know, I'm a huge supporter of you, and I love your show. I've also listened to Rush Limbaugh for years, and I just happened to... flip over and listen to him the other day and hear his reaction to Cruz's speech.
What did he say? And I don't even know, because I'm on air when he's on air.
Well, to make a long story short, basically, you know, Cruz should have, endorsed Trump. And
really, Rush said that? Interesting.
Not in those words. I mean, but he, you know, it was pretty strong, you know, carrying the water for Trump. And I was kind of surprised because he went back to, and I know you feel him for Rush and everything, and you know, I don't know how much you're going to comment on this and stuff, especially without having heard it yourself, but he mentioned the thing that, you know, some of the reasons that Trump, or that Cruz rather, had
hey Josh, you know, it's Friday, and I'm feeling a little like we can sort of play outside the lines here a bit. Why don't we keep you through, and then we'll take you in the next hour, because you're not going to be able to finish what you're saying here, because the music's come on and the Soros machine's going to get you. So you want to stay through? Okay, we'll keep Josh through. 888-900-3393. I'd love to take a bunch of calls in the next hour. We got Matt Walsh joining, so he's going to take a sledgehammer to the status as per usual. We've got more coming. Stay with me.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Only on the Blaze Radio Network. Spreading freedom across the nation. This is
the Buck Sexton Show.
Team Buck. Team Buck. Team Buck. Welcome back to the Freedom Hut. Yeah, how did you know I was laughing at Alex Jones? I don't. What are you watching? I'm just talking to somebody about the. Oh my gosh. Okay, guys, I know this is going to sound like it's staged. I'm literally looking at some of the RNC stuff, and there's a tweet from McKay Coppins. Wait, where is it? I have this up on Facebook, and I was just laughing. McKay is at BuzzFeed. And he has Alex Jones pacing back and forth at my airport gate in Cleveland, semi shouting into his phone, intensely gesticulating. Oh, man. There's a part of me, guys, who I really want to do Alex Jones' show. I mean, I won't. And I don't think he would say he would never have me because he'd want to just be mean, obviously, because for some reason this guy hates me. I don't even know this guy. But I just think he's very amusing. I think he's a very talented and insane entertainer for what it is. I think he's a kind of a true believer, actually, which is even scarier. But what's the video on the Blaze right now of Alex Jones? I didn't even see this. Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, because, guys, Alex Jones has been... So I literally started laughing when we came out on air looking at some Alex Jones stuff, and Ty knew that I was thinking about Alex Jones for some reason. That's so weird, by the way. Mind meld there, Ty. Totally, totally true. And apparently there's some other stuff on. So he is insane, and it is... Oh, he crashed the Young Turks set during the RNC? I didn't even see this. What a lunatic. I have to... Okay, guys, I'm going to watch this in the break, and we're going to come back and maybe play some of the audio if we can. Can we get some of that audio, Ty? That's going to be awesome. Oh, and we got a guest caller. Pardon me. I'm being so rude. It's like I invite someone over for dinner and I don't feed him. Joshua in South Carolina, I want to let you finish your thoughts, sir. Go ahead.
Hey, Buck. Yeah,
so you're asking me about Rush, but go take your time now. We got a minute or two. Okay. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah, so I was listening to him the other day, and I haven't listened to him often recently because I felt like he was kind of giving Trump a pass on a few things. And, you know, it's not that we agree as conservatives on probably 95% of most stuff, you know. But when I see people that just have given Trump a pass on stuff, I tend to not want to listen to him. Anyway, I wanted to get his reaction on Cruz's speech at the RNC, and I tuned in and listened to a couple hours of what he was saying. And you know, he had he's very smart, and I still admire him and everything, and I mean, nobody will ever be off, but it just seemed like he was defending Trump because he came out and said, well, you know, the way this whole thing started, or one of the things, you know, the thing with Melania versus Heidi Cruz, is Cruz's PAC went and tweeted a picture of Melania Trump. And
right, was, right, yeah, we know the backstory there, sure.
Right, but he said it was Cruz's PAC, and based on the research I've done and everything I've ever known about it, that was not a Ted Cruz PAC, that was a anti-Trump PAC, and that, you know, you may call that splitting hairs, but facts are facts, and you know, that to me was a pretty big deal. That's something that.
So what part of this though, Josh? What part of this would you like me to react to specifically? Because you've given us a lot here.
Well, okay, the thing that
I kind of need a question, and then we're going to need to sort of move to the next move on. So go ahead though.
My the thing that's most important to me and my question is: are we not all still Americans? Can we not all, at the end of the day, say, you know, whatever your decision is, when you go into that booth, that's your decision. You shouldn't have to be harassed. You shouldn't have to be maligned and, you know, thrown under the bus and called a traitor, or, you know, that you don't love America, you know, because you can't pull the lever for Trump or whoever else. Can't we all, at the end of the day, just say, this is America. If you're going to decide that you can't vote for Trump, and also at the same time, a vote, not voting for Trump is not a vote for Hillary Clinton. That's just not true, because at the same token, a vote for Hillary would be a vote for Trump. So, you know, it doesn't work.
A vote for Hillary Clinton is a vote for Hillary Clinton. I totally get that.
And he said that was one of the things that bothered me, you know, because he actually said that, you know, if you don't vote for Trump, you're voting for Hillary Clinton. And I can't, you know, as an American, that just boils my blood, because this is about liberty. And that's okay. One thing
okay. I hear you, Josh. Let me, and thank you for holding it from South Carolina, and thank you for staying with us there. So, okay, so we got to let Josh in there. I mean, a few things, and I'm always, you know, for example, Tucker Carlson says openly, so this is not by, and I don't know Tucker, I've only worked with him a couple of times. I don't think he would necessarily even know me if I walked into the room, but I mean, I've worked with him a couple of times. Always been very, very nice to me, and you know, I mean, the guy's got a great side part, so I feel like we're members of a special club. Anyway, good hair, the Carlson. Good hair. Big hitter, the Llama. But you know, he says very openly that, he doesn't criticize Fox News because they're his employer, and he also just doesn't believe that that's something that should be done, right? So he doesn't criticize Fox. And look, that's my way of sort of backing into. I mean, the fact that Rush and his team allow me to fill in on his show is obviously one of the great honors of my career, my 5 years now in media. Remember, I didn't set out to do this. This just kind of happened, which is, you know, it's a happy accident. And also, maybe even more to the point. So that's why there's a difference between being wimpy and being and not showing respect. Right. And so if I do his show, and I, by the way, I think our caller was completely, everything he said is well within his right to say. This is just from speaking from the I perspective, which is, I know during some of the sort of social justice warrior meetings that I was forced to attend when I was in college, it was always speak from the I perspective. So I'm speaking from the I perspective, from the me perspective. Although me sounds selfish, right? I is better. Me. So from my end of things, it would be impudent and disrespectful, in my view, for me to say anything. I could disagree with Rush, but it's sort of like, but it's sort of also like, you know, I'm a guy who's just happy to be in the NBA, and someone's like, well, what do you think about, you know, what do you think about Michael Jordan? And it's like, well, I mean, and I mean now, right? It's like, Rush isn't retired, Michael is, but you know what I mean? The greatest in the field of all time, you're gonna imagine an NBA player getting up there and be like, well, you know, yeah, like Michael Jordan was, he was pretty awesome, but, you know, I think I've got a better jump shot, right? Like, it's just, no, you don't do that. And so I'm open with you about the fact that I'm never going to, it would be disrespectful, impudent, and probably very bad form on a number of levels for me to criticize Rush. So that's just me being honest with you about that one. There are other people I have no problem criticizing. I also, by the way, I tend to shy away from criticizing people. And there are some people in the left-wing media that I know and I would even consider to be friends, not particularly big people, but there are people that are on that side of the fence. And yeah, I have a, and maybe that's unfair and it's a bias. You know, maybe I should just be a total equal opportunity, attack dog, but I'm not. If I know somebody, you know, if I know someone's scent, if I know somebody, then I just don't have that in me to sort of say, oh, well, it's just me, the persona attacking. No, this is me. I mean, I'm the one on the microphone. I'm the one who's speaking to all of you. So I'm not going to say that. That doesn't factor into my thinking sometimes. So if I don't know somebody, I don't attack them personally, with the only exception being public figures who are just complete. You know, if you're running for president or you're a senator, I mean, you're fair game. But I don't attack looks and things like that. That's not, you know, I really shy away. If it happens, it's sort of, I'm not perfect and I get that. But I really try to shy away from that. I mean, there's a lot of funny jokes I could make about any number of politicians. I don't even want to name a few, but about the way they look and such. But I'm not. Fashion choices are, that's kind of fair. Fashion choice is okay. That's fair game to me. But somebody's physical characteristics in terms of, you know, oh, so-and-so is, well, anyway. I don't even like to go down that path. And I got diverted for a second. Oh, but his point about people vote for who they vote for. I completely agree. But people vote for who they vote for. And you know, I get frustrated with all this, just like I know many of you do right now. I get frustrated with the political campaign as it is. Do you know how much I wish I could stand up and just have a, I don't know how else to say this, just a normal conservative candidate to promote and defend in every venue, at every place I possibly could? I still think it's better for me to do what I can to prevent Hillary Clinton from being the next president of the United States. And that's the position that I take. But it's not easy. It's easy to, I mean, it would be easy if it was just, Buck, talk about why Hillary's terrible. I mean, I could do that all day long. But, Buck, defend this thing that Trump says or defend his record. It's hard. And I think even the most adept Trump defenders on TV sometimes must be aware of the fact that they sound preposterous. You know, they must be aware of it. It's not possible that they're and they're, look, from their perspective, they're literally taking one for the team. You know, they're taking one for the team day after day with the idea that in the aggregate, Trump winning is a better thing. And for some of them, it's obviously a huge benefit to them personally and to their careers and everything else. But I'm very frustrated with this situation. And I'm frustrated that this is where we find ourselves. And, I'm not going to spend today. You know, there's some shows where I feel like it's just every time you tune in, it's just, you know, this is terrible. That's terrible. I'm angry about this. I'm angry about that. There's a degree of catharsis, a sort of collective catharsis that people have from that. I just don't view that as the best usage of art. It's also just not who I am or how I feel. You know, I sort of reflect where I am on these issues at any given time with you. And some days we just kind of sort of let it rip and relax a little bit and not allow us to get all, not allow ourselves to get all bogged down and, oh gosh, you know, it's just all so horrible and there's going to be, you know, the streets are going to run red in the future if this continues. I can't do it. It's just not me. Some other people do that. That's fine. You know, some other people want to talk about chemtrails.
Bilderbergs, the Illuminati, the chemtrails. You know, I mean, he's a sellout. I mean, I just want to make sure we all know. I mean, the CIA substation in New York City is just, you know, I mean, he is the government, people.
I wish I was the government. It would be such a better government. It would be fair. It would be well-run. It would be considerate. Would kick butt when it had to, but not when it didn't.
But, I mean, he's Bilderbergs.
Man, it'd be fun. It'd be fun to create a show. I've thought about this. It'd actually be a great opportunity for parody to do a show that's like a conspiracy theorist show, but you're doing it purely for entertainment value. Sort of like the way Colbert did a version of the O'Reilly Factor, which, by the way, is the only funny thing I've ever seen Colbert do. That show was pretty funny sometimes. Colbert now on the late night show is not funny at all. It's just not funny. It's jerk-like, actually. And you know, he had Jon Stewart on last night, and Stewart's all so sanctimonious about everything. You know, these insipid leftist comedians, they just never think, you know, maybe my job as a leftist, instead of just carrying water for one side and ridiculing the other, maybe my job could be to point out the absurdity of everything and make everyone laugh and make everyone in this country feel better. You know, I thought that's what comedians were. When I was growing up, that was what I thought comedians were trying to do, that nothing was sacred, that everything was fair game, that they would make fun of all that could be made fun of, and they'd push boundaries. And that's why I feel like you see some, in the past at least, people responded so powerfully to comedians because there's an honesty to what they do, or there was. Now it's just all like they're just little marionettes, little puppets of the DNC and of the left and Think Progress, Talking Points Memo, HuffPost, all these places. It's all the same thing. It's so boring. And they're such cowards. Comedians who are cowardly, it's just not funny. It's just snide and gross and destructive. I'm going to watch this Alex Jones clip. We're going to have some fun with that when we come back. And we'll take some more calls. If you're on hold, we got more calls up. We're joined by our friend Matt. Matt will probably help us transition into a more serious frame of mind, I'm guessing. But maybe not. Whatever Matt wants to talk about is what we're going to talk about. 888-900-3393. Phone lines are open, team. More coming. Stay with me.
Buck Sexton. Dispensing the truth.
On the Blaze Radio Network.
You're listening to the Buck Sexton Show.
I gotta tell you, it's the best thing I've seen from the RNC so far. I mean, in terms of entertainment value. So, the Young Turks, which has this guy, Cenk Uygur, at least I got his first name right, Cenk, so I'm not trying to get his last name wrong on purpose. I forget his last name. And it's Cenk Uygur, I think. He is a guy who does things on the internet. And Alex Jones, we all know
Alex Jones here. You listening, Jones? You want a piece of this? You want to go mano a mano in a debate? Come on now.
We all know Alex Jones. We know the Young Turks guy. Maybe some of you might know him. The Young Turks was doing their show, I guess, at the RNC, and they're like far left, Bernie Sandernistas. You know, that's sort of their thing. And I know people like this in New York, and they're just. We just need to go full on socialist and social justice, right? So socialism and social justice warrior stuff, that's everything. Everything else is a distraction. Everything else is just the sort of right wing, racist, white, corporate, whatever, right? But you have Jones, who is a completely insane conspiracy theorist, very entertaining sometimes, but just coming up. It's like, you know, this is the guy who looked through my official bio and saw that I was a CIA analyst and was like, look what we found here, hiding in plain sight. It's like, No, it's not hiding in plain sight. That's just my bio. I was an analyst. I learned some things. It was interesting. Did my best to serve my country. Kind of wish I had joined the military instead sometimes, but, you know, whatever. I did what I could under the circumstances. All right. So where was I? Oh, yeah. So Jones is up there, and then the Young Turks show with this guy, Cenk. And it's just pandemonium. I mean, theblaze.com has the video, which does add something. We've cleaned this up. There are a lot of curses. If you go on The Blaze, just be aware. This is all videotaped, but we want to play a little bit of, oh, and Roger Stone, the guy with a giant Nixon tattoo on his back. So you've got Alex Jones. There's fluoride in the water. I love Jesse Ventura. The drones are coming for us all guy. And Buck Sexton's a CIA plant to take over media. You've got Cenk, the smarmy socialist, Uyghur, who just all he does is say super mean things about people and doesn't want to engage in real arguments. He just wants to sort of throw feces and laugh. And Roger Stone, who he's like a Nixon era political operative that was on TV and has been banned from a bunch of TV stations. Anyway, it's pandemonium. We'll play the audio for you. Go.
I'm not going to debate this guy. You're a hatchet man. I don't know why anyone in the media takes you seriously. All you do is lie. You're known as the biggest liar in media. You're the biggest liar in media.
Don't get too mad. We got to have a...
All right, well, first of all...
He's actually mad. You're actually really upset. I think you should have come to debate it. That's true.
All right.
Once you get out of here, Alex.
All right. We got to continue the show.
Hey, man. Nobody watches you. We know nobody watches you.
You think Saudi Arabians aren't funny enough, your little jihad?
Hey, first of all, let me explain something, all right? Okay, this is...
Hold on. We're against Saudi Arabia, you dumb... We talk about that all the time. You don't know... What do you think, the lizard people are in charge?
Oh, this is awesome. We're against Saudi Arabia.
Is that what you think?
You're the anti-liberal and you're pissed.
Nice here.
You know what I care about? I care about the American people.
Good. You're the one flipping the house.
All right, look. This should have been like, I wish this had been, talking about WWE or WWF style stuff, this should have been on the main stage. Oh, it would have been great. It would have been great to just let them all... the craziest person from the right with the nastiest, snidest, smarmiest person on the left, right? Jones and Cenk. You'll notice how the moment that they're actually in a situation like this, there's no sense that there's decorum or I'm a public figure and, you know, we show respect to each other. I'm not going to act like they're both maniacs. And it was just awesome. I just love the whole thing, you know? It was just like, I don't know, letting two rabid squirrels just go crazy on each other. I mean, it was just like a pit fight. I mean, they were just nuts. It was great. It was great, man. Oh, Alex Jones is coming at me with InfoWars. Good times.
Bob's Big Boy. He looks like Bob's Big Boy. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like Bob's Big Boy. What is that even? They don't even have good hamburgers. It's crazy. It's ridiculous.
All right, team. We got more. Stay with me.
The Buck Sexton Show on the Blaze Radio Network. Buck Sexton,
the Blaze Radio Network.
Tim, we're joined now by Matt Walsh. He is a contributor on The Blaze. He's the author of the Matt Walsh blog. He has a huge following. Read his latest on theblaze.com, or you can go to the Matt Walsh blog. He has a piece up I wanted to talk to him a bit about that deals with the DNC next week. He says the DNC invited Michael Brown's mom to speak at their convention, and that is a disgrace. Matt, great to have you. Thanks for making time on a Friday.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I mean, I agree with you on this, which everyone already knows, but tell us, go into the details here. What do you think about the invitation to not just Mike Brown's mother, but some of the other people the DNC is having speak next week?
Yeah, it's just going to be it's been a depressing couple. You know, we had the Republican convention kind of depressing, and then it's going to be even worse next week. You know, they're having what they call the mothers of the movement, which are, the mothers of some of the young black men that have been shot by police in the last couple of years, most of the famous cases. And a few, I'm not familiar with every single case. I think there are, you know, 12, 13 of them. I'm not familiar with every single case, but the one that really jumps out at me is that Michael Brown's mom is going to be there. She's going to be featured, and they say that she's going to be speaking. And as we know now, this is not an opinion or anything. It's been a confirmed fact with ballistic evidence, forensic evidence, eyewitness testimony, everything else confirmed by both the DOJ and the jury, that Michael Brown tried to kill a cop. He attacked a cop. He knocked over a convenience store, attacked a cop, tried to kill him, tried to take his gun. And they're gonna take this man's mother and give her a speaking slot at the DNC. And by the way, it's not so that she can get up there and say, listen, you know, this is why you have to follow the law and be disciplined and don't attack police officers because this is what happened. Look what happened to my son. You know, that could be a really valuable thing to say. But no, she maintains that her son was murdered by a racist cop, and they're giving her a platform to speak that in front of the nation in the middle of a month when there's been cops attacked all across the nation. It really is. It's disgraceful. That's what I called it.
And there's the rationalization in their minds for this. Do you think it's, I mean, I know it's probably a combination, but I kind of wanted to just hear you work this out for us a bit. Do you think it's someone like Hillary Clinton, it's purely political, or is there also an element of she somehow believes that, I mean, how can any rational person think that this is a good thing to do for the country, for the Democratic Party, or for anybody, other than this feeds into a narrative that will drive up minority voter turnout come the election? Is that all it is, or do you actually think that prominent Democrats really believe this crap?
Well, Hillary Clinton, I maintain, is an empty shell, and she believes in nothing but her own power. So, no, I don't think she really believes this, or she really believes anything. I think it's very clearly a political move. They know. Remember, like I said, this was Obama's DOJ that they issued a lengthy report. They investigated this after it was investigated locally, and they confirmed that this was not a racist thing. Michael Brown was not murdered by a cop. So it's been confirmed. The Democrats themselves have confirmed it. So, yes, they absolutely know better, but they also know that the narrative, the lie, the fable has lived on in America, especially in the minds of liberals, and that's who they're trying to pander to. So they're going to put her up there, and they don't. I think they frankly, it's not that they want cops to get killed. I just don't think they care if cops are killed. They don't care that much about that.
I'm sorry, Matt. Go ahead. Didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Because I wanted to check before I asked you about this, and this is from NPR, so I feel like they've probably got the hookup. They're connected in with the DNC, so if they say it on this, I'm sure it's true. That Sabrina Fulton, mother of Trayvon Martin, is going to be speaking there. What does that mean? It's, you know, the Michael Brown thing, as you and I have both said many times, it's a lie. DOJ, Eric Holder's DOJ confirmed. Any DOJ would have confirmed it. They had five black eyewitnesses who said, yeah, this is what happened. So that's, but there's that narrative, right? And so they don't care that it's a lie. The narrative is that cops kill young black men without consequence because they're racist. That's sort of a summary version of the broader Black Lives Matter narrative. What's Trayvon Martin's mother speaking? What's that narrative? Don't punch somebody in the face because if they're armed, they might shoot you. What do you think they're going for with that?
Yeah. And George Zimmerman was not a police officer. He's not even white. So they're just lumping it all. It doesn't matter. All of these disparate cases involving police or not even police, a neighborhood watchman, they're not even related. They're entirely different situations. Some of them were justified. Some of them were not. But they just lumped them all together because it was a young black man that was killed, and that's all that matters. And what I would compare it to is, imagine if you had some right wing wacko who attacked an openly gay man because he was upset that he was gay. And the gay man pulled out a gun, shot and killed the guy. And then the RNC turned that dead bigot into like this martyr. And they invited his mom to speak at the RNC convention to talk about the dangers of the gay lobby and to defend the traditional marriage. I mean, can you imagine the reaction to that? I think the RNC, the convention hall, will be burned to the ground because people will be so angry about it, and rightfully so. So that's what they're doing here. They're turning these people into martyrs and giving their family members a platform. And meanwhile, these are violent thugs who it's sad what happened, but, you know, they brought it on themselves.
You know, Matt, outside of our borders, there have been a number of movements and politicians in the sort of Islamist and jihadist mold that are famous for literally saying one thing in English and saying another thing, for example, in Arabic. People, this was true of Arafat. This is true of the Muslim Brotherhood broadly and around the world. This is true of a number of movements where political Islam is at play, whether it's a violent jihadist movement in some cases or one that's trying to sort of work through a system and then to overthrow it. And we recognize that. And there's some people who defend it anyway. But I have to say, I think we're at a point now where with the Black Lives Matter movement, it's sort of situational, meaning that there are times when Black Lives Matter, we're told, is just about police reform and ending police brutality. And those times tend to be right after a bunch of cops are killed or something that's so horrible that they can't openly defend the movement. They have to sort of change the meaning of it. But now what we see is we've had these assassinations of multiple cops that have occurred, as well as attempted assassinations. And you see this lineup. Having Michael Brown's mother speak has nothing to do with ending police brutality.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. Yeah, I think it's just, like I said, it's just we're lumping everything together, and they come up with this narrative that can be applied to any situation. And I think the overall narrative really is, I mean, it's the same thing we hear from liberals all the time, that, you know, it's just down with whitey kind of thing. And that's, even though George Zimmerman wasn't even white, but that's really what it comes down to, is that they're trying to stoke racial division and essentially start this race war, because they know that, you know, that's something that they can manipulate and use to their benefit. And we also know that another part of this is, I don't even know, well, I don't know if this is true or not, but I don't know if Obama was running for a third term, I don't know if he would have invited them to his convention. Maybe he would have. I mean, he obviously has befriended Black Lives Matter. But Hillary Clinton, the point is, she's much more desperate to get the black vote on her side. She's much more desperate in that regard, to seem hip and down with the cause, whereas with Obama, it's sort of automatic because he is black. So I think there's this real desperation with Hillary Clinton, and that's what this comes down to. It's a very, very desperate move on her part, and I think that's why she's doing it.
Now, why is this movement sprung up now in Europe? You know, not now as in it just happened, but now as in the last 2 or 3 years, let's say. What would be your – I mean, if you had to point to this as a movement that could have existed for a long time and really hasn't, although even back in the old Occupy Wall Street days, there were very explicitly anti-cop protest groups that were kind of a subgroup within that. And they were always the – even then, so this is back in like 2011, they were the most violent in their rhetoric. They were the most angry. They were a kind of a scary group to be around. Because I was around them sometimes, I covered them, and so, but you didn't have this national, this sort of nationwide movement underway. I mean, they're calling these women who are speaking, for example, at the DNC, the mothers of the movement. Why now, or why the last few years? Well, where is this coming from?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a deep question. I mean, and you see the same thing on the right too. There are a lot of movements right now, the alt-right, the liberal, sort of socially liberal nationalism thing going on. Why it's this is all happening all at once, and I don't know exactly. I think it's just the culture is sort of falling apart, and there's nothing holding us together anymore. We're living in a post-Christian era on both the left and the right, and so people are just grasping at straws, grasping at something to believe in, turning on each other, and it's just I think that's what it is. It's the disintegration of American culture. And so it turns into, as it always has throughout history, into tribalism, and so everyone's picking their sides now.
So we shouldn't really. It's not even, you know, a lot of the conversation right now is about, well, is there Republican unity? Is there Democrat unity? You're saying that the real issue, the underlying, is there's really not American unity right now. That we're balkanized
right. Yeah. There's none at all. There's no unity. To call it. You know, the United States is just a sick joke at this point. There's no unity at all. We don't remotely, you know, to have unity as a people, we have to in some way fundamentally believe in the same thing. We have to have the same basic fundamental goals in life. You know, there has to be something there ideologically in our belief system that ties us together. And there's nothing. There's just absolutely nothing. You sit next to a guy on the subway. And he could be living in a different universe from you. I mean, he could be living in a universe where there is no God. Men can be women. Women can be men. You know, white cops are out attacking and killing black people. I mean, that's the universe he's living in. It's entirely different from yours. You don't even live – I mean, forget about union in the country. It's just we're living in different realities altogether, and there are multiple different realities that are cropping up, many of them quite fraudulent. And so, yeah, I think it's not just on the left. It's not just on the right. It's across the entire country. It's a scary time.
Just one more for you, Matt, before we go into a break here. And that is, I'm looking more for your, you know, more for an assessment than a prediction, right? Because I'll sort of set up the prediction for you, but I want to know where you think this goes. Donald Trump loses to Hillary Clinton. She becomes president of the United States. All these things you're talking about, gets better or worse? Reset or further down the road to hell? What happens?
I'm not the most optimistic guy, so I kind of feel like it gets worse no matter what happens. I think the one positive of Hillary Clinton winning, and there will be a lot of negatives, is that maybe it will cause a coalescing on the right again, and we'll get an actual conservative movement going again, which could then have an effect in 2020. But overall, I would have to say, you know, that's sort of the really positive spin on it. But overall, Hillary Clinton gets in there, and I think things get worse. Like everyone talks about the Supreme Court and everything else, it's hard to fathom from the groundwork that Obama has already laid over 8 years for Hillary to get in there and be able to build upon that. She's not starting from scratch. She's just building on what Obama did. That is also a very scary thing.
Yeah, she completes, I think, the fundamental transformation that he has been pretty successful in doing over 8 years, and she'll have quite a head start in that process. Matt Walsh is a contributor at TheBlaze.com, writer, Matt Walsh blog. If you guys haven't checked out his latest piece, I'm sure a lot of you already subscribed to him. You should do so. Also follow him on Twitter and Facebook. Matt, great to have you. Thanks, and have a good weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks a lot.
888-900-3393. Team, more coming. Stay with me.
Buck Sexton.
The Blaze Radio Network.
Got some calls racked and stacked. Let's take him. Mark in Maryland. You're on the Buck Sexton Show. What's up?
Hey, Buck. I was watching the speech last night, and people don't know how to read between the lines anymore. And I'll tell you what, Donald Trump scared the heebie-jeebers out of me.
Yeah, why?
He starts calling for law and order. You know, same thing they did over there in other countries in the Eastern Bloc came, they came down on top of their people, and the people from down bottom were screaming, oh, help us, help us, help us. And they said, oh, yeah, I'll help you. Yeah, I'll help you. And they crushed them. And same thing here.
So you're worried about populism turning into a tyannical nationalism?
Yes.
You really think Mark, I mean, you're not alone, and just so you know, there are other people listening who I know agree with you because they tell me they do. I mean, Trump, it's funny to me. People worry that Trump's going to be too hard right and too, even though, as we know, socialism comes from the left, you know, hat tip Jonah Goldberg and his work on that, but nonetheless, I don't see Trump being this hardline ideologue at all. I see him being probably a little feckless, a little, centrist on some things. It's just not, he's not an ideologue. He says what he has to say to win. I mean, that's not nothing new in politics, but he says things that offend liberal sensibilities to win. And so they're all saying, oh, he's going to become Stalin or something. I just don't see that happening at all. I just think it's not even a conversation that anybody. I know people are having it. That's why I'm bringing it up. But really, I mean, I don't know.
Well,
I mean, I knew this guy as kids growing up. Like he's not going to be Hitler. I don't think we should. That's not really the debate we should be having. You really worried about that?
No, I'm not worried about him becoming a Hitler. What I'm worried about is coming in as a Mussolini.
Well, I mean, it's not that much better, but okay. I mean, it's, you know, Mussolini's not, a, you know, we're not like, yeah, Mussolini, he was a Jeffersonian Democrat. That guy was great.
You know, Mussolini was Hitler light.
Yeah, I mean, Mussolini was invading foreign countries in an explicitly imperialist and bloody-minded, national socialist or socialist adventurism, although national socialism should be used beyond the context of just Nazi Germany discussion for another time. Thank you for calling in, Mark, though. I appreciate it. Good to talk to you, as always. Team, I think we got some breaking news that we're going to have to handle right after this break. Stay with me.
You're listening to Buck Sexton on the Blaze Radio Network. Spreading freedom across the nation. This is
the Buck Sexton Show.
All right, team, welcome to hour three today. Let's get into a Buck Brief.
You are entering the Blaze Threat Ops Center. This is a secure space. All outside comms are down. Prepare to receive the Buck Brief.
Reports are still very preliminary here, but the police in Munich, Germany, are saying that there has been a shooting at a shopping center. They have confirmed that there are some who have been killed. And I actually just saw a few moments ago on Twitter that there are some reports, early reports, that there might have been shootings even out in elsewhere in the city as well. Joining us now is Michael Weiss. He is a senior writer at the Daily Beast on national security issues. He's also the author of ISIS Inside the Army of Terror. It's a fantastic book. I've read it. It has an expanded new edition out. It is available on Amazon right now. If you want to know about ISIS, this is the place to start. Mike, thanks for calling in.
Hey, Buck. Good to see you.
What can you tell us about, I know it's very early, but Munich, what's going on?
Yeah, it is too early to make any kind of real assessment. We know that at least one person has been confirmed dead. There are reports of multiple casualties. It could be, you know, in the tens. It could be more than that. And now, although this has not been confirmed, there are reports of a second shooting elsewhere. It seems that the gunman got away, taking the Munich metro, and went to another location and opened fire. So the Bavarian Interior Ministry is cautioning people to stay out of open spaces, and not to share any images or videos on social media, because that tends to cause more confusion than it does, bring closure to this.
So still very, very early. I want to ask, though, in recent weeks, we have seen a few disrupted plots certainly in Europe. But what have we seen in Germany when it comes to terrorism that hasn't actually come to bloody fruition? But haven't there been a number of these plots, or a number of plots, I should say, because we don't know what's happened here, that have been thwarted by the Germans?
Yeah, they've arrested a number of suspects and tried to break up what they consider to be ISIS cells in Germany. I will tell you, guys I've interviewed from ISIS who defected have said that Germany's got an enormous bullseye painted on it. This is a place that the ISIS foreign intelligence branch was looking to hit. Some of the speculation had been that they were going to use female suicide bombers in Germany, which would be a first for ISIS, but obviously following in the footsteps of the Chechen Black Widows in Russia. And then, of course, last week, or rather earlier this week, you had this axe-wielding train attacker who looked at first blush to be one of these lone wolf phenomena, but, actually was an ISIS soldier, an ISIS operative. I mean, a mock news agency, their propaganda outlet, claimed him as one of their own. They released a video of him pledging his allegiance to Baghdadi and saying he was doing it on behalf of the caliphate. So this is the thing. We're now entering a period where the ISIS-inspired, what looks to be like ISIS-inspired attacks, could well be coordinated or ISIS-directed plots. Bangladesh, for instance, was another case in point. Everyone said, the Bangladesh government came out and said, oh, these are just locals. They have no real ties to ISIS. Well, that was premature. There was they released a file of 10 known ISIS suspects, many of whom who had lived abroad and had returned to Bangladesh from countries like Canada. And now they think that they've actually got a pretty extensive network on their hands. These are people, in many cases, who've been trained up in Syria and have been sent back, you know, through other ports of call and have arrived back in Asia. So, look, I would be very, very surprised. Germany has taken in 1 million refugees. This has caused a social and political crisis in the country that I think at this point, it's fair to say, threatens to topple the Merkel, the Merkel government. And, you know, it was only a matter of time before, you know, some of these guys who came in either on their own passports or forged passports, you know, were found to be, you know, ne'er-do-wells and people who didn't really belong there in any kind of humanitarian capacity.
That's what I wanted to ask you about next. My understanding is, based on the reporting, that the axe-wielding terrorist from, what was it, just last week, that he was posing as an Afghan so he could be a refugee or get through the, reach the points of entry to get into Germany, but was actually Pakistani, but was an ISIS-trained operative. Is that the latest on this guy's background?
That's what we've heard. Again, they haven't finalized any investigation. Originally, it was thought that he was genuinely Afghan. Then it was said, as you point out, that he might have been just posing as an Afghan refugee and actually Pakistani. I don't know. It wouldn't be surprising to me, though. I mean, as you know, the Pakistanis are all over Afghanistan, mostly for ill these days, and have been since the invasion. Would be very easy for somebody like him to get a Pakistani passport, and then pretend.
Yeah, that border is largely a fiction in some places anyway. It's very easy to get
completely. The Taliban, they get their IEDs from they're constructed in Pakistan in many cases and transported across the border. Look, this is the problem. You're seeing now the whole scale collapse, disintegration of the post-World War I border in the Middle East, and these sort of human waves of people who are flooding into Europe, most of them, the vast majority of them, genuine victims of persecution, whether it's the Assad regime's campaign of cleansing in Syria or ISIS terrorism. But it's just common sense. Some of them are going to be working for the bad guys and looking to inflict harm. I mean, at first ISIS was against the refugee crisis because they wanted to control population centers. They wanted all the people to remain in their so-called caliphate. Then they realized, hey, this is a golden opportunity for us. I mean, talk about fashioning a legend for yourself if you're an ISIS spy. Just say that you're a refugee.
It would be terrorist malpractice from the perspective of ISIS if they didn't use over a million people infiltrating in who are obviously not going to have much in the way of documentation, can't have their stories verified one way or another, and are hiding among tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people who those are the true stories, right? I mean, it's one thing to show up and you have some long tale about how, in my home country of wherever, I'm oppressed and I'm a political refugee and people are coming after me. It's another thing when you're the, 10,000th person talking to the immigration officials or whomever, refugee agents, about that very same issue. It's very hard to distinguish between who's lying and who's not.
Yeah, exactly. And we haven't even dealt with the possibility, and in fact, I would say the likelihood that this attacker in Munich, if this is related to Islamism or jihadism, is a native-born son of Germany, not necessarily even from abroad. I mean, how often have we seen that movie? It happened in Paris and Brussels, Bangladesh, obviously, and all these countries. I mean, it's much easier to fashion someone who comes from a country in Europe to turn that person into a terrorist than to dispatch someone who's from elsewhere. I mean, the reason that ISIS is leaning heavily on these European networks and the reason that the guy who's heading up, at least he was until recently, he may have been captured by Turkey, we don't know. The guy who was heading up their foreign intelligence branch, the Amnal Karji, is a French national. It's because he said, look, I'll plan the Paris attacks, I'll plan the Brussels attacks, and I know this country. I know its strengths, I know its weaknesses, I know how to infiltrate certain areas, I know how to scout soft targets. I was born here. And ISIS is like, as the nation state project dwindles, as they lose terrain and as they prepare for the loss of Raqqa and Mosul, although I don't see that happening in the near future, they are going to reemphasize foreign operations. And to do that, they're going to rely on Western recruits.
This is, I think, a good place to transition. I'm sorry. A good place to transition into. And I'm speaking to Michael Weiss. He's the co-author of ISIS Inside the Army of Terror, which has a new expanded edition out now. Basically, everything, all the nuts and bolts, everything you need to know about the Islamic State in that book. Michael, the Turkish coup. There's a lot of stuff going on there, and we've been talking about some of it here on the show. But specifically from the counterterrorism angle on all of this, and sort of Turkey's role in both playing gateway for good or for ill to Europe and being a necessary partner in the fight against the Islamic State, how does the coup, or the failed coup, I should say, factor into all of this?
Well, in several respects. First and foremost is the rise in feverish and deranged anti-Americanism in Turkey now. You're seeing mouthpieces for the Erdogan government say, actually blame the United States for trying to assassinate the president. There's one outlet in particular that's been peddling this conspiracy theory. This was a CIA plot. The CIA is sheltering Fethullah Gulen, this Islamic cleric who used to be aligned with Erdogan, and then they broke in 2013 over corruption charges. So that's going to have dangerous repercussions. Americans are now very, very vulnerable. They're in a dangerous spot living in Turkey. They could be beaten up. They could be killed. And that's going to make Ankara less inclined to want to do any kind of business with the United States. Even President Obama came out just now, today, and said that all of this talk that we had, foreknowledge of the coup, is just it's not only wrong, but it's very reckless. Second, if you look at the way this thing went down, I mean, the conventional wisdom within the first 24, 48 hours was, this was a Keystone Cops affair. You know, John Kerry said, oh, this looks like it was very maladroitly perpetrated and they weren't successful. Well, actually, it was much more sophisticated than it seemed. And the reason it went off so pathetically is they had to bring up their timeline for when the coup went down, because they had already been caught, essentially. By 4 p.m. on Friday, Turkish intelligence had figured out this plot was underway. So they had to do it that night, as opposed to wait a few more days or weeks or even months. Second, or third, I should say, given the extent of who the actors involved and now the purge, I mean, 50,000 people have been sacked or suspended or thrown in prison, including about one-third of the generals and admirals in the Turkish armed forces. The Turkey's military is being hollowed out as we speak. And it's going to put its force capability, I mean, at a record low. So for them to be involved in any way in the coalition, I think it's almost impossible for them to do anything beyond just kind of basic logistical stuff. Most importantly, there were at least four refuel tanker aircraft flown out of Incirlik Air Base, which is Turkish-owned and operated, but has a sizable contingent of U.S. Air Force personnel, about 2,500 guys. It's a NATO air base, essentially. The coalition is using it. It is the most relied-upon air base inside Turkey to wage sorties against the Islamic State in Syria. The power at Incirlik was cut right after the coup, and I think the whole place is still, I could be wrong about this, but last I checked, was running on generators. And while the air missions in Syria have continued, the fact that, you know, the commander of that air base on the Turkish side has been sacked as a plotter, as a putschist, and that all of his deputies have also been sacked, makes it seem as if these guys have defectively, the anti-government agents, fifth column, had infiltrated a NATO air base. And I've been talking to some Syrian rebels on the ground who have been fighting ISIS, who are getting U.S. resupplies either by land through Turkey or in some cases when they were under siege by ISIS through airdrops. They're now telling me they haven't received anything. And I said, why? And they said, well, the Americans say to us it's because the Turks are not coordinating after the coup. So this is going to have an impact on the war. It remains to be seen to what extent or how, you know, quickly it can be rectified. But there's no way. There is no way that Turkey is going to go, you know, whole hog with us against ISIS. They weren't even doing that to start with, right? I mean, their priority is fighting the PKK, the Kurdistan Workers' Party. Even that, by the way, Buck, I mean, the commander of Turkey's second army was sacked. And this is the guy responsible for the border. This is the guy responsible for running the war in Syria, any kind of operations in the Kandil Mountains of northern Iraq, and fighting the PKK. And in March, he was hailed as a great pro-Erdogan government ally, and today he's a Gulenist. I mean, so, you know, you're seeing a kind of Stalinoid paranoia grip the Turkish security establishment now. Even Hakan Fidan, who's the intelligence chief, is being called in before the president because they see this as a colossal intel failure. So, you know, how can they help us if they don't have an army and if they don't have a security apparatus?
One more for you, Michael, before we're going to get forced into a break. And that's just how much of this is Erdogan Putinizing the country, cult of personality, and how much of this is Erdogan as a symptom of a larger issue of abandoning the old Turkey in favor of essentially an Islamist future?
A little from column A, a little from column B, and then column C is, look, sometimes things are as they seem. You know, there was a lot of conspiracy theories in the West that maybe this was a plot concocted by Erdogan to consolidate power. This would be his Reichstag plot, fire kind of situation. I don't see that. I think that this was a genuine coup. He has divided the country. You know, half the population is fanatically loyal to him. The other half hate his guts. And that other half consists of Kemalists, secularists, opposition parties that are, you know, very much want to return to the sort of Ataturk period of separation of mosque and state, and that see the military as a guarantor of Turkish secularism and a restorer of democracy when the political classes get too, you know, freewheeling. The other of that other half of the population also consists of the Kurds, the HDP party, which is led by a very charismatic politician. Left wing, you know, mounted a challenge to AKP during the last election. You know, Erdogan has really driven a wedge through his own society in a way that I think other Turkish leaders have not. But he's still very powerful. I mean, he said at the height of the Gezi Park protest, which is what going on 2 years ago, he said, "Look, if these guys, if they put 100,000 in the streets to denounce the government, I can put 1 million in the streets." He's right. I mean, by showing up on CNN Turk on via FaceTime on an iPhone. And rallying the masses, and he stopped the coup. I mean, there were people climbing aboard on top of tanks and sort of hugging army soldiers into submission, and that was effectively their whole, the reason that everything went his way. I mean,
it's amazing. The other way. Stopping a coup with an iPhone.
Yeah, with an iPhone. Yeah. And this is by a guy who has done everything in his power to circumscribe freedom of press and, you know, social media. He's banned Twitter and Facebook multiple times before. During the Gezi Park protest, I mean, CNN Turk, which is now, you know, his savior, essentially, they broadcast a documentary about penguins while people are getting shot through the eye bullets and tear gas canisters.
All right. Michael, we got to leave it, but thank you so much. Michael Weiss is author of ISIS Inside the Army of Terror. He's a senior writer over at the Daily Beast. Michael, thank you for calling us.
My pleasure, man.
Team, we've got more. Stay with me.
This is the Buck Sexton Show.
The Blaze Radio Network.
This is the Buck Sexton Show.
I don't have a whole lot in the way of updates for you on that shooting in Germany. Right now, we know that there are several dead, according to authorities, and more wounded at an attack in a mall. The police operation is currently underway right now, and they're trying. They don't have the shooters. At least one shooter is on the loose right now. They are tweeting out in Germany, sort of from official accounts I've seen in Munich and elsewhere, that this needs to be that people need to shelter in place, avoid crowded outdoor areas. The shooter is on the loose. So we are in an active shooter situation in Munich, Germany right now, and gunfire erupting at a shopping mall there. So the one shooter is on the loose. There's video of this making the way around the internet. And the shooting at the McDonald's happened around 5:50 p.m. German time, 11:50 a.m. Eastern time. It's unclear. The shooting was inside a McDonald's across from the Olympia shopping mall. That's what's known right now. This is according to CNN. Gunfire has been reported in several locations. Of course, that could just be a shooter who's moving and people who are in different areas reporting hearing the gunfire. But there are some witnesses that say three different people had firearms. They have not been able to arrest any perpetrators. There's a manhunt underway. I mean, Munich is just in total, look, it's in lockdown and there's a bit of panic right now, understandably so. If it's three shooters and for everything we're seeing, look, the overwhelming odds are that this is another jihadist attack on a European ally. Overwhelming odds. Not sure, don't know, but overwhelming odds. 1,000 to 1. I give it 1,000 to 1 right now. That doesn't mean that this couldn't be a something else, based on what we know so far, but overwhelming odds. And I think overwhelming odds are going to go into beyond a reasonable doubt here within an hour or two. Most of us will all know exactly what happened here in terms of the perpetrator. The media, though, going well into tonight, will be saying, well, can we really know? We don't want to jump to any conclusions. Do we really think that's the shooter's name? Do we really think that's the shooter's religion? So get ready for all of that to come your way. But I'll give you more updates, team, as they come along. More in a few.
The Buck Sexton Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
What's up, team? We're joined now by Heather Wilhelm. Heather, thank you so much for calling in.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
So tell us about some of your latest pieces, where we can find them, and what you've been up to.
Well, you know, my latest piece was this week at Real Clear Politics, and it was entitled, Sorry, Trump GOP, the choice is not chicken or fish. And that's a reference to Chris Christie's infamous talk this week with MSNBC, in which she insisted this is a binary choice. We got to choose Trump or Clinton. There's no other way. And if you're not behind Trump, you are supporting Hillary Clinton. And I begged to differ with that.
All right. A lot of people in this audience are going to want to hear about that begging to differ. So please give us a little. Okay. So what's the, is there like a nice, cheesy risotto option on the menu? What's the third choice?
in the movie Airplane, I think the third choice was lasagna. And, look, I pointed out, first of all, there is actually a third choice. Libertarian former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson is polling at about 13%. If he makes it 15%, he'll be on the debate stage. So there's an actual viable option to vote. And also, as I pointed out, if in a lot of states, I live in Texas. If you sit out, it isn't going to make a difference. And it could also be seen as sending a message to a political party. In this case, I'm referring to the GOP that's kind of gone off the rails. So I think those are actually two very, very viable options, particularly if you're feeling uncomfortable with the current Trump versus Hillary selection.
Now, what about the argument then that I'm sure, because I think you're speaking to right now, a 70% pro-Cruz audience, more or less. I think that's probably a pretty fair estimate of where the sentiment is of the team, as I call them. And then 30% are either libertarian or pro-Trump or any number of other things. So let's say we all can agree that it's that the chicken or fish in a red state, for example, like Texas, doesn't really make much difference. Although on a very large scale, I guess it could. But, for the most part, it doesn't make much difference. What about in battleground states, though? What about for people who live in Ohio, Pennsylvania and Florida? If they really don't want to see a Hillary Clinton presidency, they still going to vote Gary Johnson?
Well, that's what I would do if I was in that situation. The argument for voting Trump for reluctant Trump voters, there seems to be twofold, right? One is, look, Hillary Clinton is terrible, which I think, we can all agree on that.
Indeed.
And then number two seems to be Supreme Court justices, right? So I'll start with the second. Look, we're looking at a guy, Donald Trump, who just today has demonstrated that he's pretty unhinged. He's pretty unstable. He's going off about the National Enquirer. He's going off about, Ted Cruz's father again. He also has shown zero consistency, zero principles. He lies all the time. I just have a really hard time trusting him that he will indeed appoint those Supreme Court justices. It doesn't seem like a very safe bet. As Chris Christie himself said during this MSNBC interview, they asked him, they're like, well, Governor Christie, what happens if Trump betrays the Republicans? Which I think everyone deep down suspects he will. And Chris Christie says, well, there's at least a chance he won't. And his reasoning behind that was very interesting. He said, look, this guy is motivated by winning. first and foremost. He is motivated by not being a loser. And when you think about that applied to politics, what a disaster, right? I mean, someone who's obsessed with winning and with power is going to sell their supporters out the minute they get that power. So I think this whole Supreme Court thing is highly questionable. And I think if you watched the convention speech last night, I mean, I'm almost starting to question whether Hillary is worse. You know, this is a guy who could decimate the Republican Party. Maybe he already has. And, you know, who knows? Maybe 4 years of Hillary would actually, I mean, again, we've heard this all before, but maybe the GOP could actually get their act together and we could have a true conservative candidate in 2020. So I think those are things that, and look, I understand why somebody would pull the trigger for Trump because Hillary is awful, but I think that people might want to take the next few months and think about, you know what, is this guy, and watch him closely, is this guy really going to deliver what he's telling us he's going to deliver?
Heather Wilhelm, who's talking to us right now, is a weekly columnist for Real Clear Politics and a senior contributor at The Federalist. You have a piece coming out in National Review, the magazine, shortly here, Crabapple Hillary. Can you talk to us about it a little bit, or is this like a Game of Thrones spoiler and that's no good?
I would be happy to talk about it.
There we go.
Yes. So this is, you know, Hillary Clinton has, for all this, right, throughout this campaign, we've watched Donald Trump. And, you know, there's this whole conspiracy theory, right, that Donald Trump is actually secretly out there to elect Hillary Clinton. And watching him go through his various gaffes, he'll have an enormous, enormous brouhaha that will take attention off of, say, Hillary's emails, the fact that she's sabotaging national security. Any bad story that comes out about Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump is there to swoop in and rescue her with some sort of snafu. So what I write about in my piece is kind of incredible that this woman still can't seem to have any fun whatsoever in running this campaign. It's one of the most joyless campaigns I have ever seen, you know, and she admits that she's not a natural politician. But when you watch her, you can just almost see like, it's like someone's turning a very slow crank, you know, getting her to go, getting her to smile, getting her to cackle. I think she's running for president because she doesn't know what else to do with herself. You know, again, she's just this, she's also hungry for power, obviously. But man, it's amazing that she hasn't managed to have any fun considering all the layups that Donald Trump is just tossing to her.
Yeah, it does seem joyless, entirely joyless on her part as well. And the fact, has she done, she still hasn't done a press conference yet, right? I mean, this is, I only think this is possible to be something that's happening because of all the Trump-tastic and Trump-terrifying stuff that's going on, depending on who you are. But she hasn't, she doesn't take questions from reporters.
No. And by the way, and she totally gets away with it because Donald Trump is running the Donald Trump Show 24/7. Constantly changing the topic from important things to, you know, I called this once the Us Weekly election. And it really is, you know, we're talking about these little things, who insulted Tidy Cruz, National Enquirer, you know, who's getting fired in the Trump camp, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, by the way, there's major geopolitical events going on. And Hillary Clinton has managed to get away with so much, including, as you point out, completely hiding from the press. But, you know, I think she's just sort of sitting there in her office, rubbing her hands and maybe joylessly laughing, watching this whole, you know, Trump shenanigan parade go by. So it's something that's been really enabled by Trump's ability to play the press and, you know, the press falling into that trap, obviously.
Now, we didn't even get to the dessert course yesterday with the team. We were talking about the Cruz situation at the RNC. So I don't want to go back there again because I don't want to give anyone indigestion and people pull their chairs out from the table and get very upset and go off to their rooms. So we're not going to get into that again. But I do want to ask you about a related issue, and that is the down ballot issue. There are two arguments right now. One is that Trump, that the top of the ticket, irrespective of who it is, if you don't support the top of the ticket going into the election, the rest of the ticket gets hurt. There's another argument that, well, if you support a top of the ticket that is terrible and that sort of contradicts the rest of the ticket below it, that's, you know, that's going to hurt it. Which one do you find more compelling, an argument for people who just want at least the House and the Senate to stay red?
Right. You know, well, look, very quickly, I thought Ted's speech was heroic. You know, I was quite mad at him before that speech for various reasons, including buttering up Donald Trump during the primaries. But that aside, you know, a lot of people are quitting the Republican Party in dramatic fashion, right? Or at least several high-profile Republicans have done so. And, you know, I got to say, the thought has crossed my mind, but I'm sticking in it because I'm voting down ballot. And that's hugely important. So I think, you know, it's going to be hard for people to separate themselves from this national debacle. But honestly, my advice to people running down ticket would be to back away from this dumpster fire as fast as you can. You know, I do think that people are, because that is, I do think that people locally will keep, will turn out the vote down ballot because there's a sense of helplessness. What else can you do, right? Especially if you can't stomach pulling the trigger either way, you know, for the presidency.
What do you think about Ivanka's speech last night, by the way? She said okay, I'm just going to stop and let you talk.
This is my pet peeve of this campaign. It drives me crazy. And it's really weird. And again, this is sort of this tabloid culture thing where, you know, everybody goes out there and says, well, you know, say what you will about Donald Trump, but he has to be a good guy because his kids are so great. And I sort of watch it with my jaw on the floor because we don't know anything about Donald Trump's children except that they're attractive and they perhaps have good manners and dress well and can maybe read off a teleprompter. You know, and Ivanka gets up there and she's a beautiful girl. And I think that that mesmerizes a lot of people. But, you know, it's been pointed out today that she was spouting a lot of talking points that could have been straight from Hillary Rodham Clinton's campaign. And by the way, her talking points were completely irrelevant. These were things that her father, as she likes to say, had not said his whole campaign, which is A, bizarre, but B, you know, I've also seen pointed out, you know, there's this desire to separate Ivanka from the mess that is the Donald Trump campaign and the ugliness that has gone along with the Donald Trump campaign. She is one of his closest advisors. She's been with him the entire time. She is supporting him. She is supporting the horrifying things that he has said. The kid glove treatment of Ivanka in particular drives me crazy because it's not paying attention to the pretty pivotal role that she is playing in this disastrous campaign.
Tell me what you really think, Heather. don't no, hold back, Heather. Don't be, you know.
This is my pet peeve, really. And I'm convinced we're going to see it through the rest of the campaign, right? Because, I mean, look, I mean, it's an interesting story. I mean, I have no doubt that Ivanka has a bright future ahead of her. And, you know, but it's a very interesting meme that's playing out right now.
It is indeed. Heather Wilhelm is Heather Wilhelm is always honest and always interesting. She's a weekly columnist for RealClearPolitics.com, senior contributor at The Federalist. Follow her at Heather Wilhelm on Twitter. Heather, thank you for joining. Have a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, you too. Thanks for having me.
All right, take care. More coming, team. Stay with me.
Buck Sexton, The Blaze Radio Network. Sexton Show on the Blaze Radio Network.
All right, team, some calls coming in. Ryan in Colorado, what's up, my friend?
Hey, what's shaking, Buck?
Not much, man.
Hey, so I just wanted to end it out on hopefully, sometimes you just have to laugh, and hopefully my analogy translates. I find myself calling into your show because it's fun, man. So there's that. But
thank you.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be fun. I want people to be like, ooh, it's fun. Buck's coming on. I don't want it to be like, uh-oh. I don't want it to be like that freshman calc class that everyone's like, oh, I mean, it's like worthwhile, but I don't know.
Right. Go ahead. Yeah. So my buddies and I, when we've been sitting around, I've found that we've all been just laughing when anytime the topic comes up and how we're going to vote. And just, as you say, full disclosure, none of us are Hillary fans. We're anti-Hillary all the way. But the conversation comes up and the things that are said, and we find ourselves laughing when you're tasked with something that you know has a good chance of not working out, and you laugh, but you don't know why you're laughing. And all of a sudden it hit me. A lot of us ride dirt bikes, and there's always that dude that doesn't have a bike that comes up and he's like, hey, man, I want to ride your bike. Man, can I ride your bike? The bike being analogous to America in this story. And in this case, we have two people coming up that want to ride your bike, and so you ask your questions. Hey, you got a helmet and boots? And the first person is like, what difference does it make? And so you're like, oh, scratch that. You're out. You're out. And the other guy, he's saying, yeah, the best helmet, the best boot. It's going to be huge. And you're thinking, oh, man, I don't know if we could, but these are big boy bikes, and they'll kill you if you're not watching out. And so there's this how it works is there's a guy in the corner that never speaks up or never really gets involved in the conversation. He's like, hey, man, he's going to wreck your bike. Don't let him ride your bike. He's going to wreck your bike. And then you have everybody that's distracted by shiny objects all the time. He's like, hey, let him ride the bike. He said it's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. And I don't know if you've ever been in one of those situations where your buddies, you're just like, oh, I think this might be a bad idea. But but you sit there at the end and you say, all right, one down, four up, clutch left, brake right, and you let him on the bike. You know, I don't know. I think that's why we're laughing.
I like your analogy. I'm not exactly clear what it means, but I like it. I'm not really following, but I'm enjoying, if that makes sense. So it's all like right, I'm on a dirt cool. bike with my eyes covered, but you know, whatever. It's cool though.
Fast car. Someone that wants to drive your fast car, you know, they're going to possibly wreck it, but you let them drive.
Right. Well,
it.
Does it make you feel better if somebody has like driving gloves on when they want to drive your fast car, or does it make you feel like, wait a second?
Well, it's the questions. Hey, can you drive a clutch? Right. So that would be the question for a car. So the boots and helmet thing is the first thing you always ask in real life when a dude wants to ride your bike, because you usually don't let them, but sometimes you do for entertainment. And
all right.
If they don't have and Hillary doesn't have a boot or helmet.
Ryan,
boots or helmet.
you succeeded in entertaining all of us and hopefully also in illuminating, although I was, like I said, I like it. I don't really know what we're saying here, but I like it. But thank you for calling in, brother.
Enough,
be
man.
Safe on that bike. Enjoy yourself. All right, and with that, team, as of now, my understanding is I'll probably be on CNN in the 7 o'clock hour tonight, most likely talking about Munich, although we will see. That can always change. I'll post on Twitter or Facebook when it's confirmed, so we'll have some terrorism to discuss. And that can sometimes – I'd like it to be about sort of counterterrorism and expertise-based, but sometimes it gets a little bit lively when the ambush comes against me, so we shall see. I'll definitely be with you Monday. Until then, my friends, no matter what, have a good weekend and shields high.
The Buck Sexton Show.
Only on the Blaze Radio Network.